Mr. Rayner Taylor, Reel 4. How did you actually come to get conscripted then? When did you get your first news of it?
Well, when, as you're approaching your 18th birthday, you're warned to go and attest. That, what attesting meant, except you went to register. And then, after you'd registered...
What happened? Where did you have to go to register?
I think there was some recruiting office or the town hall. I don't quite know which building it was.
And what happened?
They just take all your particulars and you're warned that you'll be called up... Eventually, perhaps about 3 weeks afterwards.
You weren't given a medical at that stage?
Oh, not at that time, no.
What was the next day?
Were sworn in.
That was 3 weeks later you were sworn in.
Sworn in.
Where did that happen?
That was at Ashton. No, we were sworn in at the town hall and all. And you were sworn in by magistrates or whatever, whoever had the authority to swear you in, you see. And then you got your calling up papers.
Were there many of you swearing in at the same
time? Oh, yes, yes, quite a lot. All of the same age group, you see. So all your pals are round about the same day. Your classmates would all be going round about the same time. And in the main, it meant a lot of your friends, a lot of the people, a lot of the friends... were placed in the same units. I wasn't that fortunate. Yes, I was. There were three. I knew three that from round this area that went into the same people the same time as I did.
Now, you're not quite sure, I know, when you were called. When do you think it was, roughly speaking? You said 1916.
Yeah.
Which bit of 1916?
About August.
And when you'd done the swearing in, where were you sent to?
We went to Ashton Barracks.
Is that Ladysmith Barracks?
Ladysmith Barracks at Ashton. And from there, we were sent to the training unit at Prees Heath.
Now, what happened to you at Ladysmith Barracks? Was that...
We were kitted out, given our uniforms.
Do you remember what happened when you were kitting out?
I do.
Can you tell
They just gave it you. They gave you a uniform and, he looked at you and gave you one that had to fit you.
You weren't measured then?
Oh, measured? I came home. After we'd been kitted out, they allowed us to come home for the night and we had to go back next morning. Now, when I came home, when I got called up, my brother was on leave from France at that time, same week. And I came home, I did feel proud. I got this uniform on. I came home and... I wish many times I had a photograph taken of me, because in every area were too big. The trousers were too long, but you could get away with them being too long with putting putties on, but they were too wide. My tunic could be taken off without unbuttoning it. They'd go over my head. I came home. And our Albert, he looked at me and said, "Who the hell gave you that? Who gave you that?" I said, "Well," he said, "What did them give you that for?" I said, "Well," he said, "this you should have told them." Well, immediately you joined the army, you don't tell people what to do, you accept what they give you. He said, "It's miles too big." He said, "Try mine on." And I tried his tunic on, which fitted a lot better than this. He said, "I'll swap this. That fits a lot better." And I exchanged him. I let him have my tunic and I had his. Well, when I paraded next morning, his were grubby and greasy, but it fitted me better. We lined up, you know. And the sergeant coming along, the inspector, he stopped immediately, so he stopped dead. "What the bloody hell you been doing?" Quite innocently, I told him, I said, "Well, My brother's on leave from France, and he said that tunic, that tunic I got fitted better than him, and it did. So he swapped me. He says, "You barmy bugger." He said, "You'll have to pay for a new one now. I can't wear that." Frightened me to death. He scared me stiff. But oh well, we got a new tunic out of it. Eventually, and for punishment, I had to fill the coal buckets for each of the barrack blocks and carry coal all day. That was my punishment.
What other kit were you given at Ashton?
Oh, just a uniform and a kit bag, a towel, a hold all. I could almost recite what was in the knife, fork, spoon, razor, comb and toothbrush. That's what the hold all contained. I think we had another pair of socks. I'm not sure about that. A towel. And this kit bag.
You wouldn't get your webbing and...
Oh, no, we didn't get that. We didn't get it for quite a long time. No, we had to learn how to march before they give us that, you know.
Now, you were at Ladysmith. You were kitted out there. And yeah. You were sent home. And then next day you reported back to the barracks.
And we were taken onto the other train and taken to Breeze Heath.
Now, do you know the number of the training battalion there that you were put in?
Oh, no. It was just... I always remember it had a button for a cap badge. DRB, Training Reserve Battalion.
And how many... What was it like at Breeze Heath? What was the situation?
Thousands and thousands and thousands of the whole Heath was one huge training place. It would be about... I think it was about... a couple of miles outside Whitchurch. A vast area. About the very nature of the name tells you, Heath, Breeze Heath. And, oh, goodness gracious. I saw something there which just went to prove how bad the manpower situation must have been. At Breeze Heath, I saw a soldier with a wooden leg. Now, that seems incredible. And by a wooden leg, I mean a peg leg, a stump. And actually, he was in the army there. He was doing a job. He was doing a job releasing a fit man. But it just shows how bad the situation must have been.
Right, now I want to look at what life was like while you're at Priest Heath. Not the training part, I'll come on to that, but what it was actually like living there. What was your accommodation?
We're at huts. They were in huts, and you had, for sleeping arrangement, you had three boards and two standards. You put the boards on. A palliasse filled with straw, which you fill yourself, and two blankets. And that was your sleeping accommodation. And a pillow filled with straw.
Was that comfortable enough for you?
Well, usually, when you fill your own with straw, and of course, when you don't know much about it, you stuff it as tight as you can, which makes it more uncomfortable when it tightens up. Depending on yourself, that. But... they're as comfortable as you could make it, you know.
How many people would there be to the block?
About 36 to a tent, to a hut. Somewhere, I should think.
And
about
a single
that.
Story, was
oh,
it?
Oh, yes.
Just the ground floor.
Ground floor.
And so there'd be other 36 other trainees. Would there be an NCO in the block?
Oh, yeah, there'd be a sergeant and a corporal, Lance Corporal. Oh, yeah.
And who would keep... Was there any heating?
Yeah, there was a stove in the middle, but there was no... very little allocation of fuel. Very little. There was a lot of dodging went on trying to get fuel. There was a coal dump, which was heavily guarded, and the people... You did all sorts of things to get the fire... stove going, you know.
Do you remember any of them?
Oh, yes, they used to try and pitch coal with the, you know, there was wire around this coal dump, and they used to pitch them, you know.
How would you manage it?
Well, best way you could. If you got caught, of course, well, how large you got caught.
Did you get caught?
No, I never did. I think I only went twice on them. I weren't very clever, though.
What about keeping the place neat and tidy?
Every day, there were two people delegated as orderlies. And their job was to... You had to make your own bed, of course. Their job was, when you got on parade, sweep the hut, tidy everything up. They also at night, they would bring the toilet bucket to the door. They used to bring a bucket, and then their job to empty it in the morning. And their job was to keep it tidy. And it wasn't the same people every day, you know. They had to do turns at this job. Orderly.
Was it better than being on parade? Or
well, yes, probably.
You mentioned the toilet bucket. Was that for night use? Toilets and washing arrangements did you normally have?
Well, they call them the ablutions. Very, very basic. There was a long line with taps.
Outdoors?
As long as...
was it outdoors?
Oh, no, there would be a cover over it, yes. But that's all there was. It was just an enclosure. And it's same with the toilets. They were the same, you know. They were very basic. But they were toilets.
What about kit inspections? Did you have kit inspections?
Oh, yes. Kit inspections, in the main, were surprise items. You see, stop me from fiddling. They were very particular about kit inspections. You had to lay a kit out in certain order. And you got to have everything as that was issued to you. Otherwise, you'd be charged for it. Oh, yeah.
Was there anything missing? Would you
lose things? Oh, missing? The dodging that went on at kit inspections. Somebody deficient of something, and they'd try and borrow it off somebody else, you know. And immediately, they had their kit inspected. They tried to get it back to the person they borrowed it.
All sorts of, to them?
Oh, yes. All sorts of things like that. And the NCO would be going round with the officer and hoping he didn't notice what was going on. You know? They did, but they sometimes jump on them. But it was part and parcel.
Why would kit go missing?
Why did you? Somebody stole it.
Was there much stealing of kit?
Not a lot. No, not a lot. There would be. They used to have a say, if somebody pitches yours, we'll pitch somebody else's. That's what it boiled out.
And that's what you'd do?
Oh, yeah.
What about stealing of personal money, things like that?
That I knew of. Very little. I think if there was a spate of thieving went on, I'm sure they'd jump on it. And the men themselves would have jumped on it.
But that didn't happen?
No, I didn't. I have heard of it happening in some units, but I never came across it.
Now, you were a young lad, just in the army. Yeah. How did you react to the lack of privacy and the discipline? You know, army life. How did it... early days?
I think we rather expected it. And there were some that... it affected some people, but I didn't notice it affected me because you were really afraid to show fear or shyness. Because if you showed any shyness, goodness gracious, your life would be worth living. Oh, no.
Why? Was the bullying?
Yes, well, yes, of a type.
What type of bullying was it?
What we call today taking the mickey out of them. That not physical bullying. Oh, no, I never saw any of that. No.
And what sort... So Who would do the bullying? Were they older men or what? Was it just strong?
Just amongst themselves, yes, yes. And sometimes you would get... You'd get an older man who perhaps had been out and been wounded. Come back and, of course, you tried to show their authority and they know it all sort of thing. You did get a bit of that, but very little. Very little.
So the bullying was just mental, it wasn't...
Yes. Mentally, not otherwise, no. No.
Did you ever get picked on?
I don't think so. I know, I can't recall that I ever was.
Were all the men, you mentioned some were people coming back for a second go, you know, people who'd been out.
Oh, yeah.
Were all the rest pretty much like yourself, the same age and
background? Oh, yes, except these that were coming, or they'd been sent to us for a sort of a rehabilitation effort, you know.
But the main part of you were?
Were similar age groups.
Were you from a similar background?
When I went to the Glamorgans, they...
I mean at Priest Heath. Really.
Oh, yeah, similar backgrounds.
Were there many middle-class lads there, or was it mainly...
Oh, yeah, I would say quite a lot, because there weren't a lot of middle-class people then. But you got the odd ones. A case in point, a member of a very, very well-to-do family in Hollywood... Owners of an ironworks, and in my age group, joined, were called up the same time as me, and went to do our training, and went to Priest Heath, and after a week or two, when we found out how to form fours and march in step and order, we were issued with equipment and were sent on a route march. And it was the first time we'd had this equipment on, and it take you a day to learn how to put it together, really, you know. Afterwards, it's nothing. I went on this route march and coming back into camp, we thought it was... We looked like soldiers. We had a full pack on our rifle. I thought it was... And as we marched into this camp at Priest Heath, there was a motor car drawn up just inside the gate of the camp. And it was this lad's mother and father. They'd come to visit him. And I can see his mother now. She stood. She was a big, blousy woman, very arrogant. She was an arrogant woman. She stood there, and he was in the same four as I was. This bloke. Oh, she said, my mother and father. Said, oh. And mind you, there was no such a thing as saying hello, mother, because you're marching to attention, you see. So he has to march through and just look at him and acknowledged him the best way he could, and we're brought to our area and dismissed. Well, his mother played out. There, Willie carrying a pack, unheard of. She weren't having that at all. And he became embarrassed, you know, because she was ranting and raving about what. Anyway, they made such noises and were able to do that he got transferred to the Royal Flying Corps. That was the forerunner of the RAF.
Was that as an officer?
Well, yes, as an officer. A pilot officer.
What was his name, do you remember?
Spencer. William Spencer. And he left us. And he went to the Royal Flying Corps, and he trained as a pilot officer. I never saw him again at all after. But I did hear, on his first flight over the lines in France, he got killed. He was shot down and killed. His memorial's in the cemetery here. And every time I go now, when these oldies die, I generally go to the grave. I pass this grave and I think, Billy. His mother put him there. Because she couldn't abide to see him carrying a pack. And he was killed, over the town of Peron.
Now, he was a rare... He was the exception, then. There weren't many lads like
that. Oh,
him.
There weren't many. Not many. No, there weren't many.
Did you get on well?
Yes.
When you were training at prison?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I tell you, there's nothing else to do. Yeah. Probably they were the only people who had any money. Because perhaps instead of... And it may be that instead of allotting money to their parents, their parents even provide them with some money. But in the main...
All of you generally, lot of you, were they fairly friendly amongst?
Yes. I should say very friendly, because you lived, you ate and you slept together. So in the main, you did tend to do things together.
There weren't any fights or anything?
Oh, no. I never saw any. They used to provide boxing gloves, and on sports days they'd have these boxing dues, and they always let off steam.
Right, let's have a look at you. What food would you get?
Well,
at pre-teeth.
Basic. It was very basic. You'd have early morning tea. They called it gunfire. We always said that was to open your bowels, you know. And then you get your breakfast. Breakfast varied sometimes. It was a cold breakfast. Well, invariably it was cold. Yeah, baked or saveloys. There was sufficient. You got sufficient, but it was very basic, you know. And there was enough of it there.
What would you get for lunch?
Potatoes and... ordinary, everyday food.
Was the quality all right? I mean,
the quality. Sometimes the preparation wasn't as good as it might be, depending what sort of cook you'd got.
But when you had meat, it was reasonably decent.
Oh, yes.
But it might be ruined by the cooks.
Oh, yes, quite possible.
And what about tea? Would you get a tea?
Oh, yes. Tea would consist of, it might be jam, might be cheese. Things like that, you know.
With bread, or...?
Oh, yes. Plenty of bread. And bread, great dollops of... I don't know, butter or margarine. I couldn't tell the difference.
Now, was that... did you get enough to eat?
Oh, yes. Eat enough to eat, yeah.
What about...
And you got a supper, if you wanted to go for it.
What was that?
It'd be stew. It would be the leftovers boiled up. But it was good if you went for it. You had to go for that, to cookhouse.
What about your actual training? You say before you got your pack and stuff, you had basic, very basic drill. What were you doing in that then?
Learning how to keep step. Learning how to form fours. Learning how to march. Learning how to about turn and right. All the basic things.
Did you find that easy enough to grasp?
Yes, well, it was, because I'd been in the boys' brigade and done a bit of drilling there, you know, so it didn't come amiss at all, that.
Did you understand why you were doing it?
Oh, yes.
What did...
Well, the understanding was that you did you'd do everything together. And this was the whole basis of military training, that you could do it. You could do what you had to do blindfolded. You were that used to doing it, you see.
So you didn't mind?
No, it didn't bother me at all.
Now, you mentioned the route marches.
Yeah.
What?
Well, a route march, you did send you so many miles. That in itself was to tuck your feet, for one thing, you know, and make you make use of carrying a pack. You'd do that, you know.
How far would you go?
Well,
roughly.
5 miles. Sometimes more. Oh, yeah. And you march 50 minutes and then rest 10. And same again.
What would you do in your 10 minutes? I mean,
well, you'd usually sit down, if you could sit down, but usually they found you somewhere you could sit down.
Would you stack your rifles?
Oh, yes. Pile. There was a method of piling arms. They hooked on a little buckle the top of it were the same buckle that the strap fitted through it used to. Yeah.
And you'd march in fours, you said?
In fours. I believe it's threes now, but it used to be fours.
Were you allowed to sing as you marched?
When you were marching easy, yes.
What sort of thing would you sing? Well, in England,
yeah, the ordinary, the songs of that period. Tipperary, for one, they used to sing it. They sung marching songs.
They still sang Tipperary, did they?
Oh, yes. They sing anything they would sing. They would do anything when they were marching easy. You march to attention. It was at attention.
When would you do that?
Well, your rifle was up. You carry your rifle at the slope when you march at attention. And then.
But when would you do it?
Well, probably if you're approaching a town or just as and when the commanding officer thought fit.
Other than that, were you allowed to talk in the ranks then?
Other than that, oh yes. And then the second thing would be march at ease. Well, it relaxed this business. You could. You could sling your rifle. You could hold your rifle anywhere that way when you march at ease. And then march easy. You could sling your rifle and you could talk. You knew what you wanted then.
Right. But you had to stay in rank.
Oh yes, and you must keep in step.
Would you get any reception as you went through a village?
Depending on the village. Now some villages, they'd had troops there for a long time and they got tired of them because variety of people, you know, they get the variety of people, the variety of attitudes, and some they were very good at some place. The town of Beccles.
I'll come on to that later, because that's when you were the yeomanry. When you were at Priest Heath, were the villages around there a bit tired?
Not many. No, there were odd ones, but they'd been swallowed up by the heath. You could march 5 miles on the heath.
What about your feet? How did they stand up to it?
Well, my stuff, some people did have problems, you know.
Why do you think yours were all right?
Well, I don't know, maybe. I often thought it was because I'd been used to working in bare feet. You see, that may have. I never knew anybody who worked in the mill that had was trouble with their feet. I never knew anybody. But there were people that were really bad with their feet, you know.